The Tea Shop by Josie Adams and read by me, Nicola Barber. Before I start this story, take a long, deep breath. Exhale all your tension, all your worry. Settle in gently to the place and position that makes you feel most comfortable as you begin to relax for a full, deep, restful sleep. Eleanor Pembridge wakes up at 6 a.m. every morning, without an alarm clock, thank you very much. For the last 8 years, ever since she moved to the quaint village in the English countryside to manage the local tea shop, she's had the same comforting routine. In bed at 9, after a cup of peppermint tea and a few chapters of a good thick book. Up at 6, a cup of sweet, strong, milky tea. Breakfast of sourdough toast with butter and grapefruit marmalade. And a restorative 20-minute walk into town to open the tea shop. Her favourite time of morning is at precisely 7 a.m., which is when she begins her walk. She loves to see the cosy homes at this time of day, when the gas lights are still flickering, and seem to wink at her and say, "Good morning, Eleanor," as she walks by. She absolutely loves when the world is quiet and still, when she feels like the only person on earth and can, if she wants to, stop in front of a particularly lovely cottage and look through the welcoming windows at the glowing Christmas tree inside and imagine the cheerful, snug lives of the mother, father, and children all still asleep, dreaming in their fluffy beds. She does so today, taking in a deep breath of joy, then lets it out. It hangs in front of her in the crisp air for a moment, like a little cloud. A glimmering blanket of fresh white snow covers the thatched roofs like thick buttercream icing on a cupcake. Vanilla, preferably. She is the luckiest person alive, she thinks. The bright lights of the little English town twinkle cheerily as she comes to the top of the hill. None of the shops are open yet, but she knows Mrs. Potts from Flour and Sugar has been up since dawn, baking away, and that Mr. Grantham from Barry's Books is reorganizing the front display yet again. The town winds like a picture book drawing, with every shop decorated with twinkly lights and garlands dusted with snow. Christmas time is her favourite time of the year, and as she reaches the tea shop, the familiar swinging store sign with gold lettering, and the windows all aglow from the colourful lights, she thinks again how lucky she is to get to live in this beautiful village and spend her days doing what she loves best, reading, daydreaming, and selling tea. As she opens the door, a tinkling bell rings out above her head, prompting Darjeeling, the little white kitten that showed up at the shop one day and never left, to jump down from the counter and wind its way through her legs. He mews hello, and Eleanor bends down to give him a pet from the tip of his nose to the tip of his tail. He purrs contentedly, then hops up onto a shelf to watch her as she removes the layers and layers of warm winter clothing she's bundled herself in. Eleanor first stomps her boots to get the snow off, then removes her mittens, her scarf, and her wool hat, and hangs them to dry by the little radiator by the door. She removes her coat and puts it on the coat rack, then her big, clunky boots, which she leaves by the door. Then she turns on the lights, going to each lamp around the shop and flipping the switches. She loves that the shop doesn't have those fluorescent lights you see all over the place in cities, but rather little accent lamps all around, each with its own unique shade. The light glows from each one, soft and diffused. She pads to the back of the shop, having to walk around a display table in the centre, teetering with stacked pots and mugs of all sizes. Behind the counter, she switches on the last little lamp, which gleams warmly like a soft fairy light, and finds her pair of house shoes just where she left them, and slips them on. They are squishy and soft and warm, and the most comfortable thing to wear when spending a day inside, drinking tea. She then wraps herself in a warm knit blanket that is soft and snuggly and smells like warm baking spices, perfect for chilly days like this. Before she can get on with her favourite part of the day, picking which tea she'll drink first, she needs to feed Darjeeling. She opens the little half ice box under her desk and fills the kitten's saucer with a slosh of thick cream and empties a tin of cat food into his dish. She knows she spoils him, but he deserves it. Darjeeling, hearing the telltale sound of breakfast being served, lazily jumps down from the shelf where he'd been perched and trots over, mewing, and gives Eleanor's hand a little lick of appreciation. Eleanor, wondering how it's possible to love something so much, scruffs the top of his head. "Good boy, Darjeeling," she says, and he nuzzles his head on her ankle in response. Now her favourite part of the morning, thinking about which tea she'll have first. Will it be something dark and malty, like an Irish breakfast? Or perhaps something light and fruity, like hibiscus? Or perhaps she wants something that reminds her of summer, bursting with berries and herbs? She has an hour before she has to formally open by turning over the sign on the door that currently reads closed. She purposefully gives herself this much time because, one, there's nowhere else she'd rather be than surrounded by delicious teas and Darjeeling's good company, and two, it takes her an awfully long time to decide which tea she'd like first. The options are endless, and, if she's being honest, she tends to get caught up in daydreams as she goes up to each one to smell the leaves or dried fruit or petals, imagining the lives of the plants and the workers and the climate and the places in the world where each one comes from. Picking tea is, for Eleanor, like reading a good book. She gets lost, and she likes being lost. Especially when getting lost means sitting in an overstuffed chair with woolen socks and a steaming mug of tea beside you. The clear glass jars line the walls, each one filled with loose teas of different types, colours, and textures. Some jars are filled with a tangle of long dark strands as fine as threads, some with bright, fragrant flower petals and buds, and some studded with dried fruits that glitter like jewels. Each one holds its own world. Smelling them and tasting them is like opening a portal. She walks around the shop, running her hand along each jar. They call to her, some faintly from a distant beach, some from a snowy mountaintop, some from a cosy cottage with a crackling fire, some from a fresh, cold pine forest after the rain. The smells and flavours of the teas remind her of places she's never been, of places she dreams of going, of places she feels like she's been to before, from reading about them in a book. One jar calls to her particularly loudly on this cold, bright winter morning. She stops in front of one, filled with dark tea leaves, mixed with all sorts of beautiful, natural elements, whole cardamom pods and star anise, cinnamon sticks, cloves, black pepper and ginger. The label is written in black ink on a strip of paper taped to the side, in elegant Gothic script, slightly worn and yellowed from the years and the sun. Masala chai. A shiver runs up her spine just from the exotic sound the words make. Yes, something in her tells her that this is the one to start with today. She craves something heavily fragrant and spiced, something that will warm her from the toes up. She opens the lid and takes a deep breath, inhaling the deeply comforting scent of spices. Suddenly, she's transported to India, a place she's never been to, but has always dreamed of visiting. As she breathes in, she can almost hear the distant clanging of bells and merchants haggling with customers at a spice bazaar. It's as if she has been dropped in another world altogether, a land full of adventure and bright colours and silk fabrics. As she closes her eyes, she feels the warm sun on her face and imagines she is walking along the lush green paths of a tea estate in Assam, the country in India where all her favourite teas originate. She imagines she's running her hands over the tea plants, stroking their soft leaves. So much possibility. As she loses herself in a scent memory of a dream, all the history of Assam tea comes back to her. She can't help it. She has a photographic memory for topics that she's passionate about. Her favourite fact about chai is that some of the chai masala spice mixtures still in use today, like the high-quality blend at the tea shop, are even as old as to be derived from ancient Ayurvedic texts. Ayurvedic medicine, Ayurveda for short, is one of the world's oldest holistic whole-body healing systems. It's based on the belief that health and wellness depend on a delicate balance between the mind, body, and spirit. Even the ancients knew that tea really was healing, thinks Eleanor, knowing that the secret to good health, for her, is a happy spirit. Tea is medicine for the soul. Nowadays, many tea varietals are grown in India, but it wasn't always so. It used to all be produced in China. In the 1830s, though, the British East India Company became concerned about this Chinese monopoly on tea, which constituted most of its trade and supported the enormous consumption of tea in Great Britain, which was around £1 per person per year. The British have always loved their tea, and why not? There is truly nothing better to drink at any time of day. Just ask Eleanor. You can have the black teas in the morning and early afternoon, then the herbal and fruity teas later in the day. There is no end to the options. Eleanor isn't very good with remembering numbers, but somehow when it comes to tea, she could tell you down to the decimal how much each one costs and all the facts and figures surrounding its history. For example, she knows India came to be a mass producer of tea when the British colonists noted the existence of the Assamese tea plants growing wild in the Assam region of India and began to cultivate tea plantations locally. By the year 1870, over 90% of the tea consumed in Great Britain was still of Chinese origin, but by 1900, this dropped to just 10%, largely replaced by tea grown in India and Ceylon, which is now known as present-day Sri Lanka. Another favourite fact of Eleanor's is that consumption of black tea within India was relatively low until the promotional campaign by the British-owned Indian Tea Association in the early 20th century, which encouraged factories, mines, and textile mills to provide tea breaks for their workers. Even then, the Brits knew that a day without tea was no day at all. The promotional campaign also supported many roadside businesses called chaiwalas throughout the growing railway system. What she loves most about this fact is the image of the wallahs delivering tea to people's places of business in a chaidan, a wooden or metal frame carrier for cups. Much better than a delivery of flowers. The official promotion of tea was as served in the English mode, with small added amounts of milk and sugar, naturally. How else would you drink black tea? She never liked it plain, even if it does sometimes come with a slice of lemon. The Indian Tea Association initially disapproved of independent vendors' tendency to add spices and greatly increase the proportions of milk and sugar, thus reducing their usage and thus purchase of tea leaves per liquid volume. However, masala chai in its present form has now firmly established itself as a popular beverage worldwide, especially in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, and Sri Lanka. Lucky for Eleanor, who doesn't know what she'd do in a world without chai. All of this history ran through Eleanor's head at her first whiff of the exotic masala chai tea blend. She's had many cups of masala chai in her life, but this particular blend is her favourite. There's something about the ratio of leaves to spices that is just perfect. The base tea is the strong black Assam tea, so the spices and large scoop of sugar she'll add don't overpower it. Usually, a specific type of Assam is used, called mamri. Mamri tea has been cured in a special way that creates granules as opposed to leaf tea. It is inexpensive and the tea most often used in India. However, the tea shop blend uses a higher quality Assam tea base. It's now time to prepare the tea and enjoy the second stage of the experience, the flavour. There's no one recipe or preparation method for masala chai, and many families have their own versions. However, masala chai has six basic components, which are almost always present: water, tea leaves, milk, sugar, cardamom, and ginger. The Western adaptation of chai, or chai latte, has a lighter and sweeter taste than the Indian version, which is a more herbal and spicier milk beverage. With some teas, she'll scoop the loose leaves into a disposable mesh bag, then twist off the top to make her own sachet. but with chai. She likes to do it as traditionally as she can. So she uses the wooden scoop that's in the jar and takes a healthy portion, making sure to get a bit of everything, including the tea leaves, seed pods, and cinnamon sticks. She goes behind the counter and pulls out a small pot and sets it on the hot plate. She turns on the faucet, which lets out a gush of cold, clean, sweet water. The town is on a well system, and at this time of the year, the water is like melted ice, refreshing and bracing. She fills the pot, sets it on the electric burner, and turns on the heat. She then pours the tea directly into the pot of water, so it will come to a boil while infusing, giving the end result a much deeper flavour profile, rather than pouring hot water over a tea bag, which she does for most other teas, but not for chai. While she waits for the water to boil, she sits down in the squishy chair and pats her lap. Darjeeling jumps into it and pads around for a bit, kneading her thighs with his little nails. It doesn't hurt. In fact, the reassuring weight of him feels quite good. His warm body and low purring makes her feel very sleepy and content. Finally, he finds a comfortable position and curls up like a lap pillow. She strokes his forehead and down his nose with one finger repeatedly, feeling soothed by the repetitive, gentle movement. She's just beginning to feel like she might want to close her eyes for a minute herself when she hears the water start to bubble. That familiar, comforting sound that reminds her of a babbling brook or a hot spring, or of special times in her life when she needed a little bit of that soul medicine she loves so much. As the water comes to a boil, it gives off the scent of the masala chai, a warm, spicy fragrance that again transports her to another world, one that is much hotter and more exotic. But she is glad to be here in England, in this little shop covered in snow, with frost on the windows and the twinkle of Christmas lights warming the grey winter light. How interesting, Eleanor thinks, that while chai is consumed in hotter places in the world, it's a decidedly perfect tea for deliciously crisp winter mornings. She gently pushes Darjeeling from her lap, and he pours off her like fabric, landing with a little gentle plop on the floor before winding himself through her legs, his long tail curling around her ankles. "Excuse me, Darjeeling," Eleanor whispers as she shuffles over to the pot to turn off the heat. She then leans down to retrieve the glass jar of milk from the local farm down the road. The bottle has a label tied on with string that simply says Buttercup, and the date which she, the dairy cow, was milked. It is fresh, delivered just yesterday. Eleanor measures out a cup of the whole milk, which is thick and sweet and creamy, and tastes faintly of dried grass and flowers. She never uses skim milk. It doesn't have the right weight or flavour. She dips her finger in and lets Darjeeling lick it off. Another little treat and moment that she can't help but indulge, then adds the rest of Buttercup's milk to the freshly boiled water. She turns up the heat to bring it to a simmer again, knowing from experience and research that this will help create the rich, malty flavour she's after. While waiting for the masala to come back to a simmer, she picks out her mug. She wants something big and comfortable for the chai, not the delicate china that she likes for lapsang souchong, sometimes referred to as smoked tea, a black tea originally from the mountainous Wuyai region in the province of Fujian in China. Lapsang is distinct from other types of tea, as the leaves are traditionally smoke-dried over pinewood fires, imparting a distinctive flavour of smoky pine. The intense, elegant flavour is perfect for bone china, but for the masala chai, she wants a mug. She picks her favourite, a wide-mouthed, chestnut-coloured porcelain one with a big handle, perfect for wrapping her hand around. She takes it from the shelf and places a strainer atop it. When the chai has reached a gentle simmer, she removes it from the heat and pours it into the strainer. The steam and aroma wafts up to her, enveloping her in what feels like a hug. The smell of cardamom, ginger, cinnamon, and star anise weaves around her, as warm as sunshine. She doesn't like it to be too sweet, but she does like a little to balance out the spices and Assamese black tea. She knows it's not the most traditional, but she prefers to sweeten her masala chai with a touch of maple syrup. The smooth and silky textured syrup has a sweet, distinctive flavour with hints of caramel and overtones of toffee, and of course, maple. It adds a depth to the chai she hasn't been able to achieve with honey or sugar. After adding the maple syrup, she stirs it once, twice, three times clockwise, then once, twice, three times counterclockwise, and finishes off the ritual by tapping the spoon three times on the lip of the mug. It's the little things like this that bring Eleanor the most joy in life, the simple rituals that she can rely on and make her feel right at home, no matter where she is. She sits back down in her fluffy chair. The second she does so, Darjeeling jumps back into her lap as if he's been waiting for her this whole time. Which, of course, he has. He knows their routine intimately. She now has 20 minutes to enjoy her tea before having to flip the sign on the door to open. The first customer will be Mrs. Potts from Flour and Sugar, the bakery. She always stops by right as the tea shop opens with a warm pastry for Eleanor, who in exchange will give her a cup of tea to go. She hopes that it's a cinnamon bun today. It would be the perfect follow-up to the masala chai, warm and doughy and steaming, with a thick smear of white icing dripping down the sides. But first, she needs to concentrate on the tea. She wiggles a bit to get a bit more snug, then holds the mug right under her nose and breathes in. She lets out a sigh of deep contentment, and to reciprocate, Darjeeling begins to purr. Then she takes her first sip. It's perfect. It is warm and luscious, spiced and fragrant and slightly sweet, both from the little dash of maple syrup and the caramelized milk. Some teas don't have this extreme relaxing effect. For example, a lemon tea made with hibiscus, rose hips, roasted chicory, orange peel, lemongrass, and lemon peel will make her perk right up, like a fresh squeeze of lemon does to lettuce greens. But there is something about masala chai that makes her melt. First, she feels her brow relax, then her jaw, and then, as the tea travels down her throat, she feels the rest of her loosen, her shoulders, her spine, her hips, her knees, and her ankles. As she finishes her sip, she scrunches up her toes, delighting in the pure ecstasy of simple pleasures. She keeps sipping, closing her eyes each time she does so. Each mouthful takes her across the ocean to India, to lush green jungles, to the spice markets, to the temples. And each time she opens her eyes, she is brought back to her favorite town in all the world, with its thatched roofs and cobblestone streets and familiar faces that smile every time they see her, surrounded by everything she loves: tea, Darjeeling, Christmas, and the feeling that she is exactly where she is supposed to be. She savors every last sip until the mug is empty. She looks at the cuckoo bird clock on the wall. Exactly 9 a.m. She's been doing this routine so long, it's built into her internal rhythm. She sets the mug down on the counter and apologizes to Darjeeling for needing to stand up. He has begun to rouse, sensing that the rest of their routine is about to carry on, and slips off her lap once again, like silk. He heads to the front of the shop and jumps up onto a perch by the door, ready to welcome each customer of the day. Eleanor stands and heads to the front door and flips the sign from closed to open. She waits, knowing that Mrs. Potts will be there within the minute, and of course, there she is, her round, plump red face surrounded by a bundle of scarves, smiling from ear to ear. In her hands is a small pink box. Eleanor opens the door for her and lets her in. "Beautiful day out there, Eleanor," Mrs. Potts says. "Indeed it is," Eleanor replies. "The smell of Christmas is in the air." Mrs. Potts gives Darjeeling a pat on the head, and he nuzzles into her palm to say hello back. "Something told me today was a day for cinnamon buns," says Mrs. Potts. "I hope you're in the mood." Eleanor isn't surprised in the least. Something told her that today everything was going to go exactly the way she wanted it to. She smiles and says that it's the perfect day for cinnamon buns, and takes the box from Mrs. Potts, along with her hat and scarves, which she hangs on the rack by the door to dry. "Come in, come in. Let's help you find the perfect cup of tea," Eleanor says, as she walks to the back of the shop and places the warm box on the counter. The smell of cinnamon and icing wafts into the air, and her stomach gives a little grumble. What'll it be today, Eleanor? Where would you like to take me? Well, I've just been to India, says Eleanor. It's marvellous this time of year. That sounds lovely, says Mrs. Potts. She follows Eleanor, who stops in front of a jar labelled masala chai. Eleanor runs her finger over the label. It feels like a sacred moment. Here, Eleanor says, taking the jar from the shelf. This one will do, and I know just how to make it. Make yourself comfortable in my chair while I prepare. But first, smell this. Eleanor opens the lid of the jar and places it under Mrs. Potts' nose. Mrs. Potts closes her eyes and breathes deeply, her whole face relaxing as she does so. Oh my, she says, I can hear the tinkling of bells in the market and smell the spice bazaar. Exactly, says Eleanor. Isn't it magical? She leads Mrs. Potts to her chair, who takes a seat as Eleanor rummages about, getting ready to prepare her second masala chai of the day. If there's anything Eleanor loves more than preparing tea for herself, it's preparing it for someone she cares for. For Eleanor, there is no greater act of love than making someone a cup of tea. She turns on the faucet, fills the pot, adds the tea, brings it to a boil, adds the milk, returns it to a simmer, removes it from the heat, strains it into the mug Mrs. Potts brings with her to sip on her walk back to the bakery, and adds the syrup. She stirs it once, twice, three times clockwise, then once, twice, three times counterclockwise, and finishes off the ritual by tapping the spoon three times on the lip of the mug. She hands Mrs. Potts the tea, whose eyes widen at the scent. Masala chai has always been my favourite, she says. Reminds me of being a little girl, my mother's favourite. Always makes me feel like I'm getting a hug. Eleanor doesn't reply, but smiles knowingly, because chai makes her feel exactly the same way. Safe, cared for, and loved. After Mrs. Potts leaves, Eleanor cleans up the masala chai supplies and tidies up the shop, dusting the counters and glass jars. It's in impeccable condition, not a speck of dust anywhere, because Eleanor makes sure to get every nook and cranny each day. But still she does it, finding comfort in the ritual. Throughout the day she makes tea to go for all the familiar faces. Mr. Grantham, the bookseller, Mrs. Lisa, the nursery school teacher, Angus, the owner of White Heron, the local pub. She also packs up loose leaf tea for the Browns and the Johnsons, who come in once a week to stock up on tea to bring home to their families. As 3 o'clock rounds near, she feels a little niggling at the back of her neck. Something is calling to her. a cool breeze of menthol on the wind, like a breath of fresh air. Ah, yes, Eleanor realizes. She sets down her book and walks over to the jar labeled Moroccan mint and prepares to drift off on another journey, as easy and effortless as gently slipping into a quiet, peaceful dream.